Thank you for coming. I'm Michael Green from CSIS, Japan Chair, also a professor at Georgetown. I think some of my students are here. I'll find you later, extra credit and free food. We are delighted to have today Hiroshi Hoshi from Asahi Shimbun. As many of you know, we had scheduled this event a few months ago, but political developments in Japan required Mr. Hoshi's presence in Tokyo, because he is in Tokyo considered one of the top political analysts and one of the most connected, insightful, and strategic thinkers about Japanese politics. He's known to many people here. Hoshi-san joined Asahi Shimbun in 1979 after graduating from Tokyo University, and he has held a variety of jobs in the political news department. He was here in Washington from 1996 to 1998 as the Tokuhain political correspondent for the Asahi, and he is now the senior political writer for Asahi Shimbun. Originally, a few months ago, the title of this talk was Abe versus Ozawa. We then changed the title to Fukuda versus Ozawa, although Mike Mochizuki and I earlier were thinking maybe it should have been called Ozawa versus Ozawa. But Hoshi-san will get to all of this, the dynamics in the LDP, the dynamics in the DPJ, their dynamics with each other, and then U.S.-Japan, how all of the domestic political developments in Japan are affecting U.S.-Japan relations on the eve of Prime Minister Fukuda's visit to Washington. So we'll invite Hoshi-san to give some remarks. I may have a comment or two and a question, and then we'll open it up for a discussion from the floor. So Hoshi-san, dozo. You should have, for those who need it, earphones on the tables. And channel 5 is English, and channel 6 is Japanese. So I guess channel 1 is Croatian, and channel 2 is Serbian or something. Dozo. Hoshi-san, thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a great honor for me to be invited to speak to you today. There has never been an easy time for political analysts, whether in Japan or in the United States. In fact, it seems to be a widely shared assumption for any country that the predictions by political analysts can never be right on the mark. In Japan, many political writers, including myself, could foresee the emergence of the Abe administration several years ago, but I do not know of anybody who predicted that Abe would step down in just 1 year and that Yasuo Fukuda would succeed him as Prime Minister of Japan. And more recently, nobody in Japanese news media was aware of Abe's resignation until the very day he announced. As a matter of fact, I may be the one who suffered most from not knowing this unexpected development. This conference was originally planned on September 13th, the very day Abe made that surprise announcement. I watched it live on TV in the early morning of the 13th here in DC and ended up flying back to Tokyo immediately, canceling the speech at the last minute. I have to apologize for that to all of you. Since that is the most recent score of my forecasting, I have to ask you to listen to my following remarks with that in your mind. First, let me go over recent developments and the current status of Japanese politics. The upper house election back in July delivered a historical blow to the leading Liberal Democratic Party. While the LDP gained only 37 seats, the Opposition Democratic Party of Japan, DPJ, took 60. The defeat of Opposition Democratic Party of Japan, or DPJ, the defeat of the LDP was most clearly seen among the one-seat districts, where the competition was one-on-one battle between the LDP and DPJ. Out of the 47 prefectures in Japan, 29 are such one-seat districts. The LDP gained only 6 and lost 23 to the opposition party. Their prefectures are mainly rural, and the majority of the voters are farmers. The LDP used to have a strong support basis in these areas. Because of the so-called structural reform policy of both Koizumi and Abe administrations, public works were cut and agriculture suffered from the opening of the Japanese market to foreign products. The election results clearly showed that the construction and agriculture sectors put back their support from the LDP. The LDP lost to the DPJ in urban areas as well. Most symbolic was the result in the proportional representation, which spread out to the entire country. The LDP has long maintained a good relationship with the Japan Medical Association, or JMA, the nationwide organization of medical doctors. The LDP got the vote of doctors in return for raising the medical treatment fees, over which the Japanese government has control. Mr. Taro Takemi, who dominates the JMA as president for 25 years, beginning in 1957, established a very strong relationship with the LDP. His son, Keizo Takemi, sought his third term in the upper house in the July election, but he lost. It was the first time that a candidate with JMA backing lost. Through the structural reform by the Koizumi administration, medical treatment fees have been repeatedly reduced, and doctors lost their interest in running for LDP candidates. As a result, in the upper house, the leading coalition of the LDP and Komei plunged deep into the minority. Abe did not resign, but instead stayed on as a prime minister. In August, he reshuffled the cabinet and replaced the party leadership as a last-ditch effort to regain bailout in the cabinet. But money-related scandals involving cabinet ministers delivered a fatal blow, and Abe made a surprise announcement to resign on September 12th. In the foreign party presidential election, Fukuda received 330 votes and defeated Taro Aso, who received 197. Fukuda was elected Prime Minister of Japan. Fukuda advocated a moderate dovish approach in foreign policy. Regarding North Korea, he pushes for dialogue rather than pressure. He will not pay a visit to the controversial Yasukuni Shrine. He is cautious in lifting the ban on use of right to collective defense. He will visit Washington, D.C. this Thursday, and his first trip abroad as prime minister, and will meet with President Bush. In terms of domestic policies, he has already made clear that he will review and adjust the structure reform of Koizumi. One example would be to freeze increase of co-pays for elderly medical service. The Fukuda administration has embarked in a difficult political environment. In the lower house, since the LDP scored a sweeping victory in the election of 2005, the LDP, along with Komei, enjoys a supermajority, which exceeds 2/3. But in the upper house, the opposition has a majority and the current situation is a divided government. Under these circumstances, major policy initiatives cannot be implemented unless the DPJ support them. The most typical is the case of the anti-terrorism special measures law, which expired on November the 1st. The law enables the Maritime Self-Defense Force, MSDF, to conduct defuelling operations for coalition navies in the Indian Ocean. The Japanese government could not extend it because they failed to persuade the DPJ to support it. The oilers and escorting destroyer of the MSDF stopped operations and are now on their way back to Japan. Mr. Ozawa opposed this extension on the ground that such operations are direct support for U.S. war and the use of right to collective defense, which is regarded as unconstitutional under the current government interpretation of the Constitution. Mr. Ozawa instead advocate participation in the International Security Assistance Force, ISAF, in Afghanistan, but he has not gained majority support within his own party, and the LDP strongly opposed such an idea. As for the budget of fiscal year 2008, the budget will itself can be enacted by being passed in the lower house, but since the related legislation has to be approval from the upper house as well, the Fukuda administration will have a hard time passing the budget legislation as a whole. If the government fails to do so, revenue could be insufficient and there could be a direct negative impact on the daily lives of the people in Japan. Such a situation of the domestic politics in Japan has led to the recent one-on-one talks between Fukuda and Ozawa regarding forming a possible grand coalition. This meeting was organized by Mr. Tsuneo Watanabe, the chairman of the Yomiuri Shimbun. Mr. Watanabe has long been an advocate of the revision of the Constitution, and there must be have been a thought behind this mediation that with the creation of a grand coalition between LDP and the DPJ, the revision could be possible. In reality, however, since the DPJ is not so positive about the revision, it's not likely that the situation will develop in that direction. The talks on the grand coalition this time around had little to do with the revision of the Constitution. In face-to-face talks, Fukuda first requested a negotiation for building a consensus to implement policy initiatives, which otherwise will not go anywhere. Ozawa, according to the sources, proposes in turn to form a grand coalition. Ozawa explained later that Fukuda proposed a compromise in which Japan's so-called international contribution, that is, development of self-defense forces abroad, could only be permitted when there is a UN, United Nations resolution that authorized such an international collective effort, but Fukuda denied making such a proposal. This surprise idea of a grand coalition was not realized after all, because the executive committee of the DPJ did not approve the idea. Ozawa announced his intention to resign as president of the party, but then decided to stay, accepting the condition that he would never pursue a coalition with the LDP. From now on, Mr. Ozawa and the DPJ will pursue the path to power only through victory over the LDP in the lower house election instead of working out a policy compromise. Now that the attempt to form a grand coalition between the LDP and DPJ has failed, the tension between the two parties will stay high and the political structure of divided government will continue. As a result, contentious policy initiatives will have no chance to be implemented. For example, the DPJ will propose bills for pension reform and additional agriculture subsidies to the upper house and pass them with their majority, but they will be voted down in the lower house by the LDP majority. The LDP has just passed a new law in the lower house to enable the MSDF to resume refueling operations in the Indian Ocean, but it is expected to be rejected in the upper house. The focus of attention is on whether Mr. Fukuda will finally enact the bill by passing it with a two-thirds majority in the lower house, thus overriding the rejection of the upper house. In that case, the DPJ will perhaps submit a censure motion in the upper house and pass it, unlike a vote of no confidence in the lower house. This motion, if passed, is not legally binding. Fukuda would not have to resign, but it is likely that the DPJ would boycott the next ordinary session of the Diet as long as Fukuda stays. That would paralyze the Diet and eventually lead to the dissolution of the lower house and a call for the general election to leave the matter to the will of the voters. I would like to point out a newly emergent phenomenon in Japanese politics in which the sense of distance from the United States is changing. This is so-called rebe argument or putting some distance to the United States argument. You can see such a trend in each of the following four areas of the political spectrum. Ultra-conservative, moderate-liberal, and ultra-liberal, among them, the most evident are the extreme ends of the spectrum. Anti-US conservatives are frustrated with the moves in the United States, such as the congressional resolution of comfort women, and more recently, the delisting of North Korea as a terrorist state. Anti-US liberals are protesting the U.S. military presence in Japan, but these two extreme groups are minorities in Japan society and are not growing. They do not represent element of instability in Japan-U.S. relations. What need to be noticed, on the other hand, are the moves of politicians and Kasumigaseki bureaucrats in the category of center-right. One good example would be Mrs. Satsuki Katayama, a rookie LDP member of the lower house, who has made a career change from being an elite bureaucrat of the Ministry of Finance. She was well known for advocating a reduction of the defense budget and also reduction of host nation support for U.S. forces stationed in Japan. Another would be Mr. Takemasa Moriya, who has just recently resigned as Vice Minister of Ministry of Defense and is now receiving a lot of attention for his inappropriate relations with the defense contractors. While still in the office, Mr. Moriya was famous for saying no to the U.S. government regarding alliance management issues such as FDEMA relocation. Among younger diplomats at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, there are some who think that the value of the alliance with the United States will relatively decrease in light of the rise of China. This kind of argument has not been heard so much among LDP politicians because Sino-Japanese relations were at a historical low due to the Yasukuni visit by Prime Minister Koizumi, and also because the personal relationship between Koizumi and President Bush was superb. But with the departure of Koizumi, we started to hear some rebate arguments within the LDP under the Abe and Fukuda administrations. The hasty improvement of relations between the United States and North Korea adds to a sense of uneasiness and frustration among Japanese politicians. This kind of development could work negatively for the ongoing negotiation on host nation support for U.S. forces in Japan. You can also find rebate arguments in the center left of DPJ. One young DPJ member was very excited and told me that the suspension of refueling operations of the maritime self-defense force in the Indian Ocean is a noble reflection of the public will that was displayed in the recent upper house election, and that gave a big boost to the DPJ. Mr. Ozawa's argument to seek United Nations authorization for Japan's overseas military operations is nothing new. He first mentioned it at the time of Gulf War back in 1991. This time around, his argument has grown into a specific proposal to dispatch a self-defense force to the ISAF in the Afghanistan, while he decided that refueling U.S. Navy ships in the Indian Ocean was unconstitutional. It's fair to say that there is an element of the rebate argument in his thinking. Mr. Fukuda seems to wish to establish the bilateral relationship between the United States and Japan through his upcoming visit to Washington, D.C. The agenda will include refueling operations in the Indian Ocean and North Korean issue and host nation support. He also plans to propose an expansion of intellectual exchanges. On the top of all that, how to deal with the rise of rebate sentiment in Japan should be the big issue for him in terms of managing bilateral relations. As the center of focus for Japanese politics right now is the next general election of the lower house. For the first time in the post-World War II history of Japan's politics, two major parties, the LDP and the DPJ will be engaged in a serious competition for power. The possible timing for the election are limited to the following three. At the beginning of the ordinary session of the Diet in January, right after the budget bills are passed, this will be from the end of March through April. And finally, right after the G8 summit meeting in Toyaku in Hokkaido in July, the possible outcomes are as follows. One, a sweeping victory for the LDP. In the previous lower house election of September 2005, the LDP, along with its coalition partner Komei, secured 330 seats out of the entire 480. This time around, even if the LDP loses some of its seats, if it manages to maintain a level close to 300, the Fukuda administration could strengthen its political standing. The DPJ would still maintain majority rule in the upper house, but it would be harder to launch a strong opposition to the LDP. There would be the possibility of part of the DPJ breaking away to join the LDP. The president of the DPJ, Mr. Ozawa, would resign, and a new party leadership would be elected. The possible choices for the party president would be Mr. Katsuya Okada and Mr. Yoshihiko Noda. Second choice, the DPJ suffered a victory for the DPJ. The DPJ suffered a severe defeat in the previous lower house election in 2005. Now their seats are down to around 110. But with the tailwind of anti-LDP public opinion, it's not unrealistic to assume that they could get back to 200. If the opposition as a whole, including Social Democrats and Communists, could go over 240, thus gaining the majority, there would be a change of administration. Mr. Ozawa would be the Prime Minister and the former new cabinet. The new administration would, of course, try to implement a set of new policies based on the party platform. But for a while, they would maintain current LDP policy. Mr. Fukuda would resign as party president, and it is likely that Mr. Taro Aso, who lost to Mr. Fukuda in the most recent party president election in September, would succeed him. Some LDP members might leave the party and join the DPJ. Third case, the virtual tie between the LDP and DPJ. The LDP, along with Kome, manages to maintain a majority, but the DPJ makes a substantial gain and gets very close to a change to administration. Fukuda would continue to run the government, but being the minority in the upper house, the leadership would be very weak and the state of governance would be unstable. On the part of the DPJ, Mr. Ozawa would resign because he could not achieve the change of administration that he promised. With a new leader, whoever it may be, the DPJ would continue its pursuit of power through another lower house election. Since divided government would continue, there would be constant tension in Japanese politics. If the LDP and DPJ would form a grand coalition or collide with each other in another election, under these circumstances, there would be little hope for new policy initiatives. The forecast of election result will vary depending on the timing of the election itself. I would say at this moment that each one of these three scenarios has approximately the same probability. But as I pointed out, in the analysis of the last upper house election, the LDP's support base has been badly damaged. If you look at the situation 10 years down the road, I believe the possibility of a power shift from the LDP to the DPJ is substantially high. Over the last two decades, Japan has achieved a number of reforms in many areas. In the early 1990s, it was political reform in which the electoral system was fundamentally changed to the one-seat district system. In the late 1990s, the finance system was reformed. In this decade, under the Koizumi administration, structural reform, which was aimed at reduction of public works, and the postal system were achieved. Postal system reform were achieved, but the overall reform of Japan still has a long way to go. The most serious of all is the backwardness and obsoleteness of the administrative system of the government. The policy-making process, which is currently dominated and controlled by bureaucrats, also has been overhauled. The 8 trillion budgetary deficit is a serious problem yet to be solved. In the field of foreign policy and national security policy, Japan has made a number of policy advances, including participation in United Nations peacekeeping operations. It's a pending issue whether or not enact permanent legislation for international contributions, which would enable the self-defense forces to deploy overseas without ad hoc legislation. as is required now. It is no doubt that Japan's politics are now at a crossroad, and the question is whether the nation will meet these challenges under the continuous rule of the LDP or leave them to a new government led by the DPJ, or even choose the path of a grand coalition. Thank you very much. I would be happy to take any questions you may hear.
Thank you. Hoshi-san has prepared a longer paper, which we will have available online for certain. And will we have hard copy, Nick? And we may have some hard copies outside, but it'll be on the CSIS website for those who want the longer essay he's written that he just spoke from. And also, I was remiss before not thanking the bureau chief for the Asahi Shimbun, everyone's friend, our favorite Texan, Yoichi Kato, who also was managing the slides. Yoichi asked me to say a few comments before we go into Q&A, and I would not begin to try to second-guess Hoshi-san on predicting what will happen in Japanese politics. Actually, the three scenarios looked about right, and what we should be watching for. I thought I'd say something about the U.S.-Japan context and implications. Of course, but Fukuda-san arrives here at the end of this week for a one-day visit. I think one night is the plan. He will see the president and engage in intellectual exchange with people in town, round up a few intellectuals. and there's no doubt the press will focus on these difficult questions. The special measures, Tokusoho, the counterterrorism legislation, which has not passed in the upper house, and therefore Japan's ships are back, which is a little embarrassing. The host nation support, which is under political pressure, specifically special measures agreement, and then of course the abductee issue, where there's a danger of a collision between the U.S. and Japan if the U.S. moves too quickly to lift North Korea from the list of state sponsors of terror, The press will probably focus on these negative elements, but I think the main thing Fukuda-san is going to try to do here is demonstrate that for him, the U.S.-Japan alliance remains the trunk, the core of Japan's foreign policy. You sometimes see speculation that Fukuda's pro-China and anti-U.S. and these other things, which for anybody who knows Fukuda-san is ridiculous. I was in the NSC, as some of you know, for almost 5 years and watched Fukuda-san up close. He was the de facto national security advisor in Japan after 9/11. He was the one who the senior bureaucrats from the foreign ministry, finance ministry, defense, then defense agency, went to for their judgment. He's the one who put together the package for reconstruction, for dispatching the SDF, for Afghanistan. And he did it very pragmatically, very effectively, won a lot of respect from the bureaucrats without a lot of flash or a lot of ideology. And I think His meeting with President Bush is going to remind the White House of that core competency he has in managing the alliance, in spite of the fact that he has a very difficult political environment, as Hoshi-san just described. I also think that, to be honest, we are entering a period of some drift in the relationship, not crisis proportion, but some drift. And I think it reflects the political reality in both capitals. We've heard about the loss of the upper house and the implications for Mr. Fukuda, but the difficulties in the alliance now also reflect a weaker administration here, a Congress controlled by the opposition party, and these inevitably, these domestic political difficulties inevitably are going to make it difficult to maintain the kind of momentum and focus and strategic direction to the alliance that was possible when both capitals had control of both branches of government. I also suspect that some of the ominous downward arrows in terms of anti-Americanism reflect that reality as well, that political reality, and that some of what you see in Japan, as Hoshi-san described, is a little bit of a backlash against some shifts in U.S. policy on North Korea, for example, and that what's happening in Japan's debate about the U.S. reflects things that the U.S. Is doing in its own policy. So we are intertwined and our politics are affecting each other. But overall, I think there's a lot of reason to be confident about the structure of the U.S.-Japan alliance, about the trends. The reality is that we both face enormous challenges with the rise of China, with international terrorism, creating a post-Kyoto new consensus for climate change. The agenda for the next administration here and for the next administration in Japan is going to require cooperation, and the challenges are going to require cooperation. And I think there's a growing sense revealed in polls in both countries of common values. So that will hold us pretty well. But we probably are entering a period of some drift because of political weakness in both capitals. And because I'm beginning to think there must be we were discussing this earlier, something of a biorhythm to bilateral relationships. I mean, it's who would have thought 2 years ago that today Sarkozy would get a 10-minute standing ovation in the U.S. Congress, or that one of our closest allies, it would be Germany, it would be the U.S.-Japan alliance that's in some trouble, that the U.S.-Korea alliance would suddenly be looking very, very good, Australia is on potentially the verge of a major change of government, that the U.S.-India nuclear deal suddenly is off because of Manmohan Singh's political situation. So there's a political biorhythm to these bilateral relations. We may be heading into a slightly more drifting situation. But compared to past downward cycles in our bilateral biorhythms, it's not that severe. I think the last time we sort of were down in the trough was 1999-2000, after the reaffirmation of the alliance, but in a period of, it's almost deja vu all over again. Foreign Minister Komura came here, unhappy that the U.S. was pressing Japan to provide Kyoto funding after the Taepodong launch by North Korea. So we were arguing about North Korea. We were arguing about host nation support and the special measures agreement. There were charges of Japan passing that the U.S. was too close to China in the wake of President Clinton's 9-day tour of China. So similar. And then, of course, 94, intense trade fights. 89 with FSX. So compared to some of the past downward troughs in our biorhythms, this one isn't actually looking to be all that bad, I would say. And in part because in the upward troughs, they're lasting longer, and there's more bipartisanship to them, and there's more commitment in both countries to strengthening the alliance. You don't see any major candidates really running against the other country. Ozawa is a unique case, but I think more on that later. So I wanted to end on a slightly more optimistic note before we open up to questions and get pulled back down to the pessimistic note again. Very much appreciate Asahi Shimbun doing this with us. I have one question for Hoshi-san, and then we'll open it up. You mentioned administrative reform in Japan. And one of the areas that may have consensus in both the opposition party and the government party is Chiho Bunken, decentralization of power to the countryside. And I've heard arguments that this actually may mean that the reform engine and the energy and the dynamism in Japan is going to be at the prefectural level, as prefectures get more power and compete with each other. But I'm curious what you think of that argument, that even if Tokyo is stalemated, a lot of reform and innovation could start picking up out in the countryside.
先ほど、チャンネル。イングリッシュチャンネル5。先ほどいくつか日本における改革の試みっていうのを簡単に紹介しました。その政治改革から始まってですね、構造改革を進めてきたということで、今グリーンさんが指摘されているように地方分権っていうのは非常に大きなテーマなんですけども、地方分権っていうのはこれは自民党と民主党のテーマというよりは、政治家と官僚のテーマになっておりまして、官僚がこの数十年、特にその100年、明治以来の日本の官僚制度がですね、持っている権益を手放すのか、政治の側がそれを奪還するのかという関係になりまして、これが今、 長く続いておりますけど、まだまだ官僚側の支配が続いているということ、それが一点。それがもう一つはですね、これはその日本国民のその意識の変化が実は必要になっているんですね。その長い官僚支配の中で、その日本国民はその政治家の政策決定、政治家による政策決定よりも官僚に主導の政策決定の方が非常にその正しいという意識をまだ変えることができない状態になっておりまして、まあ、言ってみればその政治家と官僚と国民、この3者がですね、どこまでその意識を変えていくのかという動きでありますが、具体的にはその地方分権、一部その官僚の地方の方にですね、国の中央が持っている権限、予算にしますと3兆円ですので、全体の日本の国の80兆円のうちの3わずか3兆円ですが、それを地方の方に譲るという動きがありまして、まあ、それを非常にこうポジティブな動きと見るのか、まだまだその不十分な動きと見るのか、非常にこう意見が分かれますけども、少しずつその地方分権の動きが変わってますけど、やはりそのドラスティックに変えるには、その官僚と政治の在り方、ないしはそれ国民の意識の在り方というところまで変わっていかないと、ドラスティックな変化は生まれないというふうに思ってます。
Thank you. The floor is open. When recognized, please identify yourself. Chris, please identify your... I think we have a microphone, which would be up.
Thanks very much. Chris Nelson, Nelson Report. Thank you so much, Arsasan. I must say, listening to you, I think makes us grateful that our politics isn't as awful as yours at the moment, and ours is really awful, so God knows. I two questions. Is it your impression that Fukuda-san is coming here with a sense that he could still turn us around on North Korea and terrorism, or is he trying to simply make the point, handle this so that it doesn't make us look really bad? Because, of course, if he's coming here to change, he's likely to fail, and that's going to have implications. A related question in terms of political failure and blame. You describe a situation that sounds like nothing's going to get done until maybe for another election, and maybe not even then. What do the polls show? What does your gut tell you about how the Japanese people will react to this sense of systemic failure? Do they blame Ozawa for, being a pain in the butt and not cooperating? Do they blame Fukuda for not coming up with a miracle? Does it favor one or the other party, or what? So two separate questions. Thank you very much.
ご質問ありがとうございました。ワシントンに来て1週間ほどになりますが、福田総理の側近の方からメールをいただきまして、ネルソンレポートを熟読しているそうであります。まず最初の質問ですけど、北朝鮮のその例のデリスティングを福田さんがしないようにそのブッシュに迫るのかどうかという問題ですが、これはもう皆さんご存知のようにアメリカの中ではもうその解除の方向に動いているということで、福田総理がここでどういうその言い回しで発言するのか非常に難しいところですが、福田さんはおそらく日本国内のですね、影響を考えていまして、おそらくソフトランディングさせるためにはこの問題はもう時間の問題であって回避できないんだということを日本国内に印象づけるために、あまりそのアメリカ側とのですね、見解の相違が見解が離れているというところを印象付けたくないんだと思います。ですからこの問題について私は、おそらく一般的な言い回しをしますけども、アメリカに強く迫るけどアメリカからそのリジェクトされる、拒否されるという展開にはならないように表現していくんだと思います。それからこの問題と実はまあその日本国内ではそのインド洋での給油問題と絡んでおりまして、そのアメリカにこの問題で迫るにはそれを言う資格が日本にあるのかどうかということになると、その給油問題では日本は 脱落をしてますので、福田さんご自身にも非常にその後ろめたい部分、非常にあの英語でなんていうか難しいと思います、あまりその自信が持てない部分があるということで、なかなかこの北朝鮮問題を先鋭的な対立のテーマにしたくないというのが本心だと思います。ですからまあ最終的には非常にこう曖昧な表現でこの首脳会談を終えるのかと思います。2番目 の、 その総選挙までに動かないというご指摘はまさにその通りでありまして、日本の政策は総選挙次第ということですので、この総選挙どちらが勝つか負けるかを決着をするまで総体としては日本の大きな政策は動かないであります。ただそのご指摘のようにですね、明らかにあの昨年来続いているその年金問題、日本の政治に非常に大きな影響を与えているんですが、年金問題も私はそのご指摘のようにそのシステムの失敗だと思うんですね。これはその日本、先ほど地方分権の時も指摘しましたが、日本国民がビューロクラットに対して過剰な期待、過剰な依存をしていたにもかかわらず、ビューロクラットの方がそれを担う能力がないということが判明した典型的な例だと思うんですね。ですからその日本、これを機会にその日本の社会、政治、経済をビューロクラットの依存主導から転換できるのかどうかという問題設定を、特にその民主党の方ができれば、私は民主党にとって非常にそのフォローの風が吹くのかなと思っております。
Bill Clark, I used to work here. A question. I'm showing my age, but there was a time when you could pick the next six prime ministers from the LDP. Right now, Taro Aso seems to be in the on-deck circle, but I don't see who's lined up behind him. Could you give us some insights into who might possibly move after Taro?
過去にですね、10年に6人総理大臣が変わりまして、私もその日本のドメスティックポリティクスをカバーしているときには非常に忙しい日々でありました。ミスター加藤さんも、ビューロチーフの加藤さんも私と一緒にドメスティックポリティクスをカバーしておりましてですね、非常に2人で、忙しい日々を暮らした思い出がありますが、小泉総理がまあ5年間という非常に日本の総理大臣としては珍しく長い任期をしました。今度はまあ福田さんですが、先ほどそのいくつかのシミュレーションをしましたが、まあ、総選挙で、勝てば福田さんですが、負ければこれはもう民主党の小沢さん、ということになりますし、仮に私の今の見立てではそのシナリオの3番目ですね、その自民党と民主党が非常に接近するんだけど、自民党が少しの差で勝った場合、福田さんの政権は続きますが、民主党は小沢さんの代わりにですね、新しい世代の人が出てくる、まあ、私の感じではおそらく岡田克也さんだとか、前の代表の前原さんだとか、ああいう世代の人たちが民主党はリーダーをとしているでしょう。自民党の方はですね、福田さんが今政権を取って、福田さんの政権の中でそれぞれその政治家が実力をつけてきます。残念ながらですね、自民党人材が少しこう不足をしておりますが、今の政権の中ではですね、自民党の政務調査会長になった谷垣さんだとかですね、それから前の安倍政権の最後に官房長官をしていた与謝野薫さんだとかですね、それから安倍さんの非常にその親しい友達であるその石原伸晃さんだとかですね、その辺の次の世代、年齢で言いますと50代から60代の世代が少しずつ育ってきております。ただそのこれからの自民党、日本政治のむしろ焦点は自民党の中のその世代交代というよりも、自民党と民主党とのその競争という方が一番大きなテーマになると思います。
Can you speculate on one other possible new leader who's an old leader, Koizumi? Any chance of Koizumi coming back?
小泉さんが復活する可能性はゼロだと思います。
日本語でよろしいでしょうか。ステムソンセンターの辰巳と申します。話を、日米の安全保障関係の方にちょっとだけ移させていただければと思うのですが、冒頭のお話の中で守谷次官、前次官をめぐる問題についてちょっと言及されましたけれども、この問題がその同盟管理をしていく上での防衛省全体の体力といいますか、機構上の力についてこれからちょっとどの程度影響を与えることになるのかということについて、お考えをお聞かせいただければと思います。
いや、ありがとうございます。当面の話としてお話しますとですね、守谷さんはおそらくそのこの防衛問題のかなりシビア深刻なスキャンダルの中で司法的刑事的にその責任を追及されるタイミングが近づいてきていると思います。その今日日本時間の今現在日本では防衛省のオフィシャルズが30人ほど取り調べを受けているというニュースが出ていますが、非常にその深刻な問題を与えております。当面の問題としてはですね、実は先ほどご指摘 の、 そのインド洋のテロ特措法と関連するのですが、防衛省が担当しているこの法律がですね、その守谷さんを含めた非常にその深刻なスキャンダルによって、成立する可能性が極めて小さくなっているわけですね。そうすると防衛省はこの内部のさまざまな金銭にまつわるスキャンダルというだけではなくて、この政治的にですね、この法律を通せなかった責任ということを浴びることになりまして、非常に私は防衛省のダメージは大きいと思います。ご存知のようにですね、日本の場合その今まで防衛庁という組織で、全体の霞が関の官僚の中では、どちらかというとその2級3級の位置づけをされてきました。それで防衛庁の中枢はですね、最大の仕事は大蔵省からお金を取ってくるというところが仕事でしたので、歴代の防衛庁の幹部もですね、大蔵省から出向している方が多かったわけでありまして、それをそういう今までの伝統からステップアップして、新しいその機関、もう少しこう権限の大きな強い機関にしていこうというのは守谷さんのイニシアティブだったわけですが、そのリーダーシップを取った守谷さんがこういう形になるということですので、私はその防衛省全体の力が日本の官僚の中で相当これによってその低下していく、一応枠組み防衛エージェントからミニスターになった、ミニストリーになったという枠組みはできましたけれども、霞が関の中でのパワーダウンは避けられないという状況だと思います。
Mike Miyazawa, let me ask my question in Japanese.
小沢さんと福田さん の、 会談の直前に、町村官房長官あるいは自民党の伊吹幹事長その他の方々が衆議院参議院のねじれ現象、つまり参議院で、野党が過半数を占めているために国会意思の決定ができないという発言が何度も出ました。私はワシントンにいてその発言を聞いて実はびっくりしました。ご存知の通り今アメリカではディバイデッドガバメントというのは not unusual、 しょっちゅうあるわけです。で、日本は初めてそれを経験したから、みんな腰を抜かしたのかもしれませんけれども、あの時に伊吹さんや町村さんの発言の裏にあるのは自民党の意思がイコール国会意思であると、でこれが通らない、自民党の意思が通らないから従って国会意思の決定ができないと、そういう発言というふうに私は受け止めたんですけれども、
日本国内ではあの発言に対してどういうような評価というか位置づけ、リーパーカッションがあるんでしょうか。
私日本で政治記者になったのはですね、20年余り前なんですけども、その時私も非常に不自然な気分になったのはですね、自民党の取材をしていたりですね、官僚の取材に行きます、当時の大蔵省とか通産省とかに取材に行きますと、星さんそれはですね、党が OK しないんですよ、党が了承しないんですよって言うんですね。その時の党っていうのは、上に本当は自民っていうのをつけなくちゃいけないんですが、霞が関の官僚にとっての政党っていうのは全て自民党だったんですね。1955年に自民党ができてから半世紀ずっとその自民党が政権を持ってきておりまして、日本人はその政権交代ということをほとんどの人は経験していません。ですから自民党の政策が日本の政治のすべてであるということでありまして、まあ、我々もそのために自民党のインサイドを取材する必要がある。インサイド、自民党のインサイドとは何かというと、当時その派閥なんですね。ですから派閥を取材するということで、非常にそういう意味ではその自民党の中の動きが全てという時代が続いてきました。そこで今度の大連立の動きになるわけですが、今度の大連立の中の自民党の中のモチベーション、動機はですね、今ご指摘のようにこのままのディバイデッドガバメントが続くと自民党の政策が遂行できない、実現できなくなるという判断でありまして、町村さんと伊吹さんはある意味では正直な反応だったと思うんです。ところがですね、今日も冒頭にご指摘したとしましたように、もう日本の世論は自民党はワンオブゼムの政党になりつつありまして、ですから今回の参議院選挙を見ますと、多くの地域、特にその田舎と言われる地域で自民党が敗れると。特に皆さんご存知だと思いますが、日本には四国とかですね、九州とか田舎の小さい県がありますが、そこで自民党が惨敗するということになりまして、世論の方はすでに自民党はと民主党のどちらかのうちの選択というふうに思考が変化しているにもかかわらず、自民党の多く、それから官僚の多くはまだ自民党の政治こそが全ての政治だというふうに思っている。そのギャップがまだ残ってまして、仮にですね、次の総選挙で自民党が敗れるということになると、そういうその古い思考を持っている人たちは非常にそのパニック状態に陥るんだと思いますが、現状はですね、むしろ世論、有権者の方が意識が先行しているということだと思います。
That was very interesting, and I'll get you in a minute, sir. I want to briefly play devil's advocate, because after upper house defeats by the LDP in the past, when was the famous Madonna Senkyo, 89? We've heard in the past after upper house defeats by the LDP that they're over as a party. And then the lower house election happens, and everyone remembers that the upper house has Fudohyo, has a much more fluid voter participation rate, and the machine is more effective in the lower house. Why is this time different? You mentioned people have a sense that the LDP is just one other party, but why wouldn't the lower house election be like all the other lower house elections that came after upper house defeats or problems for the LDP for decades and decades?
89年の時の参議院選挙というのはですね、日本に初めてその間接税、消費税が導入された時であります。それから牛肉オレンジの市場開放がありまして、その有権者は非常にその怒りを持って、それにその当時のソシアリストパーティーの方に投票したわけですね。ところがそのソシアリストパーティーの方は、すぐ総理大臣、自民党の方は総理大臣を変えました。当時の宇野宗介さんという人から、少しこうフォトジェニックな開封総理に変えたわけですね。それによって有権者はですね、自分の投票したそのアンチ LDP の投票によって自民党がチェンジしたというふうに判断をして、90年の総選挙では、自民党に勝たせた。そのシナリオをですね、全部その当時自民党で演出した人こそ実は、小沢一郎さんという人でして、 与沢一郎さんがその海部という人を総理大臣して自民党は反省をしました、モードを変えましたということをやって自民党は勝ち抜いたわけですが、その小沢さんが今自民党にチャレンジをしているという非常に皮肉な展開になっているわけであります。ですから今回の選挙はですね、ですから例えば参議院選挙で自民党が非常に歴史的な大敗をしたわけです。ですから自民党がここでさらにガラッとこうモードを変えるということができればですね、有権者もそれなりにその納得するんですが、自民党にとって非常に残念なことは、モードを変えるのがですね、本来なら福田さんが参議院選挙で負けて若い安倍さんが出てくれば国民は非常にその自民党に対して、変わったと思います。それから構造改革も小泉さんの構造改革に対して地方に不満が出ておりますので、そこで政策を転換すればいいんですが、これはどうも転換できないということで、その福田さんと安倍さんの順番が自民党にとってあまりうまくいかなかったことと、構造改革、これはまあご存じのようにグローバリゼーションと関連してますので、日本だけでこれを転換することができないということですので、そのリーダーの顔、リーダーの顔という選び方も、それから政策的な転換もなかなかできないので、今回は私は89年と90年の自民党のそのモードチェンジのようなことはなかなかやりにくいんじゃないかと思ってます。
Ernie Prieg, Manufacturers Alliance. An interesting development this year. Wait a second. I'm in Japanese here. Never heard myself in Japanese before. An interesting development this year was the joint naval exercises by U.S., Japan, India, Australia, I believe Singapore, in the direction of Malacca Straits and beyond, and some talk that this could become an annual event. It was also clear that the Chinese were very displeased with this. So my question is, how does this, symbolically at least, this democratic naval encirclement of China, how is this viewed within the government by the opposition DPJ, and how is it viewed by the Japanese people?
もともと1972年にその田中角栄さんが日本と中国の国交を正常化して以来ですね、ずっとその田中さんの系統の人たちですね、竹下さんを中心にですね、それから橋本龍太郎さんをなどに引き継がれてきたわけですが、この人たちがなぜその日本の中でその窓口をやって中国とのですね、窓口ができたかというと、明らかにそのビジネスとの関係ですね、中国がその多少民主化が遅れていてもビジネス、日本にとって非常に大きなビジネスチャンスを提供するので、中国とはうまくやろうという、ある意味ではその非常にこう融和的なことが続いてきたんですが、それがその日本の中ではそういうグループの影響力が低下をして、逆に小泉さんのような中国とそのタフに渡り合おうという流れが出てきた。しかしその小泉さんの場合ですね、中国の民主化を求めるとか、中国に対してその人権についてその注文をつけるとか、そういうことではなく、むしろその歴史問題、特に靖国参拝を中心とした歴史問題で、まあ、中国と渡り合うということになりまして、どうもその日本の特に自民党のですね、中国に対するスタンスはビジネスで、あまりその民主的な問題をちょっとこうネグレクトするという一方、それから次は、今度も民主化とか人権の問題はパスして、その歴史問題について中国とその対立するということになりまして、なかなかその中国に民主化そのものを要求するという事態にはならなかったんですね。それからその日本の NGO についてもなども、なかなかその中国の民主化動向という議論ができない。これはまあ 実は日本の中にまだその中国に対する負い目といいますか、その戦争で中国により迷惑をかけたということに対して、中国がですね、中国の民主化が遅れているのは日本の戦争による影響をまだ持っているからだという反論に対して、日本はまだそれをこうその論理を突破できないというところでありまして、とりあえずその経済とそれから歴史問題ということで、中国経済で融和し歴史問題で対立するという、そういうところにまだとどまっておりまして、ただいずれですね、中国がどんどん台頭してきますと、その中国の民主化問題というのは日本の政治のテーマとして上がってきます。これが自民党がですね、そのライトウィングの方から提起するのか、民主党がそのレフトウィングリベラルの方から提起するのか、これが非常に注目されるところでありまして、例えばそのアメリカの共和党がそのアメリカのライトウィングが中国 の, そのコミュニズムに対して警戒をするのし、リベラルの方が中国の人権の問題について警戒するのと同じような現象が日本の自民党と民主党の中にもいずれ出てくるんじゃないかと私は考えています。
Earlier you spoke, I'm Sam Shepard. Earlier you spoke of the awareness of the public with regard to a number of issues. During my most recent long-term stretch in Japan of 10 years from 1994 to 2004, I always had a strong feeling that the public really was not fully aware of some of the issues that were going to be extremely important in Japan, such as security, the military, the changing, even the constitution to a certain extent. I think that there's a lot of awareness of emotional issues, but I'm wondering whether that's changed or not in the last 4 years, whether there is more of an awareness of these key issues of the choice between, for instance, more armament in Japan, or within the Japanese military, increasing the size of the military versus continuing with the U.S.-Japan military alliance. Those kinds of issues seems to me are crucial and critical to Japan and to the Japanese people. Do you feel like there's more of an awareness of those issues and a discussion, not just among the media, but among the people?
日本のいわゆる日本では国際貢献というふうに呼んでいるんですが、その自衛隊をですね、海外に派遣してそのいろんなピースキーピングをやろうという動きはこの15年ぐらい前から始まっただけなんですね。それで残念ながらですね、その現状はその他の国、例えば中国にしてもドイツにしても数千人規模のピースキーピングの人たちを出していますが、日本は現状今はですね、日本の PKO ピースキーピングオペレーションに出している自衛隊の数はなんと30人なんですね。これは非常に我々もお恥ずかしい限りなんでありまして、実はその日本国民はですね、の意識3つぐらいあるんです。1つはですね、そういうところは関わりたくないから30人でももういいじゃないかという人たち、それからもう1つは逆にもっといっぱい出さなくちゃいけないねという人たち、それからまあほとんどその中間の関心のない人たちなんですが、本来はですね、でこのピースキーピングオペレーションに30人しか出していないから日本はもう少しやらなくちゃいけないということは、もちろんその我々メディアの責任でもあるんですが、最大のその役割は政治家の役割であるべきだと思うんですね。ところが残念ながら今の日本の政治家はそういうその国際貢献について、日本はそのもっと汗を流せなくちゃいけないんだということを言い出しにくいと言いますか、言い出していないのが現状なんですね。日本で首相選挙区制というのは導入されても十数年になって、非常に今その 初めてこう非常に自民先ほど来申し上げてましたように自民党と民主党の激しいそのバトルが選挙区でありましてですね、なるべくその有権者が嫌がるようなテーマ、有権者があまりその嫌がるようなテーマは取り上げたくないという心理がその政治家に働いているようなんですけども、まあ、しかし私はそうした問題をこれからどんどん克服して乗り越えてですね、国際貢献をどうしていくかということは政治家がこれからどんどん発信していく、ないしは発信していく政治家の方が評価されるというような場面になっていかないといけないと思っていますが、もう少し時間がかかるようです。
I want to briefly enter the lightning round. Recently in our presidential debates, the moderators like to ask everybody to answer some very small questions in 30 seconds, boom, 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 very quickly. So I want to ask you, what is the effect of the current political impasse on, you just got, FX, so F-22 or F-15 or F-18, sorry, cut up, Guam relocation, agricultural reform, beef problem, and a Security Council seat. Diverse, but at one point at the center of the debate under Abe and Kuzmi. No effect? Big effect? Bad effect?
先日ですね、日本にいるそのカナダの大使とお話をしましたら、カナダの人たちがですね、このアフガンの治安維持活動で、70人亡くなっているそうであります。日本はですね、ここ戦後で海外のそのさまざまな平和構築活動、平和貢献活動で亡くなった方はですね、今のところ5人なんですね。カンボジアで2人、それからアフガンで外交官が2人、それから、中央アジアで、国連の関係に出向していた学者が1人、数えられるというかその人の名前も言えるんですね。私たちはおそらくカナダの人たちは70人みんな言える人はいないと思いますが、そのぐらいの国際貢献にとどまっているという現状でありまして、これはその政治の力でそのどこかでブレイクスルーしていかないといけないわけですが、なかなか今はその立ち止まっているという状況であります。今の非常にそのシビアな質問に全てお答えするのはなかなか難しいんですが、そのこれもですね、特にそのセキュリティカウンセルの問題は安保理の問題ですね。これはその日本の外交にとっては非常に大きなその作戦の失敗でして、もう一歩でいけるかと本当は思っていたわけですが、実際は全く手が届かなかった。それもその失敗したことということもあって、日本人が非常にその内向きにまた戻っていきまして、まあどうせダメなんだからあまりその提起しないようにしましょうと、であまりその世界にその自分たちのウィングを広げていくよりは、日本の国内で静かに暮らしていた方がいいということなんです。で実はその日本の外と内との見方っていうのはこう先ほどのバイオリズムのようにですね、いつもこう繰り返していくんです。なぜかと言いますと、私は最近思うんですけど、日本っていう国はですね、1億3000万の国で、例えばビジネスにしてもそのこの携帯電話にしてもですね、日本の国内だけで、まあ、金融などもそうなんですが、日本国内だけでこう暮らしていこうと思うとある程度の規模が維持しているのでできるんですね。それより広げようと思うといろいろトラブルがあるから、まあ面倒くさいからもう中にこもろうと。しかしまあこれを1億3000万人だけでとどまっていたら、なかなかその成長しないので時々外に出ましょう。しかし外でまたトラブルがあると戻りましょうというこの繰り返しだと思うんです。ですからまあ我々はそのどちらかというとそのとどまっていてはその展望がないということをその繰り返しこう主張していかなきゃいけないんですが、時々そのセキュリティカウンセルの問題にしても外に出ようとするけど失敗して中に向く、 出ようとするけど中に送って繰り返しで、まあその繰り返しながらそれでもどんどん外向きになっていくということをその我々の試行錯誤トライアルアンドエラーを繰り返してやっていくしかないんじゃないかと思いますけどね。
You get a pass on the lightning round? Okay. Yeah, Bill.
Bill Breer, also formerly of CSIS. Just a question I've been interested in. What is your judgment of who won out of the last week's or when was the week before a discussion of a grand coalition, Fukuda or Ozawa? Who came out of that stronger?
大連立の話はあの柔道でそのなかなか勝負がつかないとき判定というのがあるんですが、私は結果としては 7-3 で福田さんが勝ったんだと思います。なぜかと言いますとですね、その自民党というのは先ほど来お話がありましたね、自民党というのは非常にその50年間の政権を維持してきたということもありまして、とにかく自民党のですね、皆さんに今日お配りしたあの安全保障のグラフでもそうなんですが、自民党というのは、非常に幅の広い政党でして、何でも受け入れるという政党なんですね。自民党の最大の自民党が最も大事にしているその主張というのは、政権党であり続けるというのが自民党の最大の主張なんですね。ですから今回その自民党のですから、例えばその税金の問題とか社会保障の問題、安全保障の問題、それぞれの個別の政策はありますけど、自民党にとって最もプライオリティが高いのは政権を維持するということなんでありまして、福田さんがやったことはその政策の中身というよりもどうしたら政権を維持できるかという自民党の最大の目的からすると、それを達成しようとする動き、民主党の場合はですね、そこはもう少しちょっとそのピュアと言いますか、政権を取るよりも政策にもう少しその真面目に対応しましょうという人がマジョリティなもんですから、小沢さん的なそのパワーブローカー的なことは民主党の中では受け入れられなかったということで、狙いは同じ、やったことは同じなんですが、それぞれの党の中での評価が福田さんの方が非常に高まって、小沢さんが評価が低くなったということで、最終的なそのプラスマイナスからすると福田さんの勝ちということであります。これはまあそういう意味ではその自民党的なものがですね、民主党的なものをあの段階では上回った。しかし、これはですね、今あの段階ではもちろん上回りましたが、次のステップ、今度はその国民の判断がどう出るかというのはその総選挙のステップですので、これはまあ今日申し上げましたようにまだまだどうなるか見えていません。その日本の政治の一つのドラマが完結するのはその大連立で完結するのではなくて、次の総選挙で完結するんだと思います。
Associated with CSIS. My question has to do with economy, but really it's a political issue. Quite a few American commentators are concerned about the state of the American economy, and increasingly one hears the word recession from responsible commentators. Would that tend to strengthen or weaken the Ozawa factions, the Japan Democratic Party, or would it have no effect on it? In other words, would Japan want to be closer even to the country that it depends so much on, or would it be more likely to try to step aside a little bit more from the United States?
Hey.経済のお話ですが、日本はご存知の通り景気がもともと 3% の成長を目指すということでしたが、ここに来て減速で 2% 程度というふうに 2.2% 程度というふうに下方修正されています。まあ、これはアメリカの影響も アメリカの決定名の影響も大きいようでありますが、ただご存知の通り、もう日本とアメリカの経済は完全にそのビルツインされていますので、今更その経済で日本がアメリカから離れるということは事実上無理なわけですね。トヨタにしても日産にしてももう相当アメリカ経済と日本経済はその融合しておりますので、ですからその先ほど今日申し上げたようなその利米の動きというのがその安全保障とは別にですね経済の方で進むということはちょっと考えにくい。ただし逆にですねそのこの利米の動きの特に霞が関のビューロクラットの人たちの根源には何があるかというと日本と中国の経済の交流が活発になっているということなんですね。霞が関の官僚の人たちはその日本の経済日米間の比率よりも日中間の比率が高くなっているということに非常に敏感ですので、そうするとそのアメリカその産業分野で日本とアメリカが距離ができるというよりはむしろ相対的にですね日本と中国の関係が深まってくるということ、それでそれがですね政治の分野にも波及してくるというような動きはむしろ強まると思うんですね。小泉政権の最後の頃に小泉さんが毎年その靖国参拝を続けることが日中関係に非常にその影響を与えましたので、これに対して非常にクレーム不満が出たのはまず経済の分野からでありまして、経済界の人たちがもうそろそろその靖国参拝はやめてほしいと、日本と中国との関係がこれ以上悪化するのはまずいということを経済の人たちがまず提起をしまして、それが世論調査に現れまして小泉政権の支持が下がるというような現象がありましたので、日本の政治がですね中国との関係を相対的にその重視していくという傾向は出てくるんだと思います。
Sir.
Patrick Braden. I'm curious with the two delegations that are going to be lobbying in Congress this week, led by Takeo Hironuma, how successful you think that'll be in raising support over the abduction issue or against delisting North Korea, but especially in light of the fact that the U.S. Congress and Senator are facing other pressures from their constituents over things like American children abducted and taken to Japan, and obviously passed the Comfort Women resolution. Could you address those, please?
Just to clarify, when you're talking about the American abductions of Japanese, you're talking about when the U.S. Navy spy submarines went in and stole. I'm just kidding. You're talking about just so people understand. You're talking about divorce and custody cases.
Yes, yes, parental child abductions from the United States to Japan.
Right, right. No, it's a global issue.
お答えになるかどうか分かりませんけれども、その拉致問題のことなんですね。日本が、その非常にその拉致問題というのをその最もその最重点事項にしていましてね、北朝鮮との関係で、一方でそのアメリカは核問題を最重点事項にしていまして、そこでその日本とアメリカとのそのズレが出ているわけですよね。そこでその日本の国内ではですね、やはりその拉致問題というのは非常にその特に若い女性がちょうどですね、この11月15日というのはその日本 の, その拉致をされた横田めぐみさんという人が30年前にそのされた日なんですけども、それにとって日本ではその感情的に非常にその強い反応が起きてまして、北朝鮮のそういう行動は許せないということになっていますが、しかしご存知のとおり核問題というのはその それと同様ある意味ではそれ以上にその深刻な影響を日本に与えていまして、まあ、アメリカはですねそれに対してまあ核問題を最優先にして今度その核の開発をまあ放棄する北朝鮮にその一種のその融和的な動きをしようということですので、これがまあ日本日米間のズレとして出ています。しかし、まあ、最終的なゴールがですね日本と北朝鮮とアメリカ最終的なゴールが一緒のゴールにしましょうということでお互い歩み寄れないかつまり核問題とその拉致問題の原因究明それからその他の拉致の被害者の調査などのすべて同じパッケージでですねゴールを目指そうということがまあ言われておりまして、まあ、おそらく今度の福田さんとブッシュさんとの話し合いでもですねそのまあ抽象的なところですけどその拉致問題それから核問題をパッケージでゴールを目指そうということになるんでしょう。まあ、途中経過いろいろ出てくるでしょうけれども、まあ、最終的なその論理的な帰結はそれしかないわけですので、おそらくの外交問題というのはいろんなところ その調整をしていくという点でもですねそのパッケージでの解決を目指すということになるしかないんだと思います。
I think your phrase packageResolution is very important and very very insightful. This issue of the abductee problem with North Korea and the nuclear problem are often talked about in this town as if one has to choose between denuclearization or abductees, and they're not two separate issues. The question of what the U.S. is willing to do in terms of lifting North Korea from the terrorism list. Would go to the heart of how credible the U.S. is in Japan because we promised in 2003, I know I was part of the decision-making process, that the U.S. would not delist North Korea without progress on the abductee issue. Progress was not defined. And the obligation on the Japanese side is to define progress in a realistic way. And until now, there hasn't been much help from Tokyo in doing that. But nevertheless, U.S. government policy in the 2003 State Department report on international terrorism said explicitly progress on this issue would be a factor. And so the question becomes not do you choose denuclearization or do you choose the abductees? The question is, as you put it, can you get the right package? Do you find enough progress relative to what you're getting from North Korea on the nuclear side? It will matter whether or not the U.S. can get a full and complete declaration, whether or not disablement is substantial or not. If the U.S. gets a very, very thin package, and in order to get it, unilaterally lift sanctions against the wishes of the Japanese government, that would be a very bad policy. But if together the Japanese Prime Minister, Fukuda, the American President, President Bush, can come up with a package where they balance these different interests, I think that would be, as you said, in our interest. So I make that pitch in part because I'm often hearing that this is either Japan has to choose between the abductees or denuclearization, but also because Jim Pristup and I have a piece coming out in Pacific Forum that will elaborate this view in more detail and far more eloquently because Jim has a hand on the pen as well. Hoshi-san, thank you very much. You've covered a lot of ground. It's brought a lot of clarity to a very murky political situation for those of us who try to follow it here. And as you can see from the large turnout, even though Japanese politics is in a state of some confusion, it's still very interesting to people. So please join me in thanking Hoshi-san and wishing him a good time here.